103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan. One of 3.2 Dublin City FM. It's The Sod Show with Brian and Peter. Good afternoon. Brought to you in association with greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. Check them out on the internet, greensacks.ie. We have a great show in store for you today. We have the grassroots archaeology in Dunderry coming up in a few moments' time. Also, we'll be checking in with Simon and Ruth and their polytunnel and checking how things are getting on. If you want to get in touch, it's at Sodshow on Twitter, sodshow.com for the back catalogue, and on Facebook, The Sod Show. Last Saturday, The Sod Show took their microphones to Dunderry Park, Dunderry, County Meath, and we stumbled across some grassroots archaeologists.
I'm standing in the middle of a field in Dunderry, and what I am looking at is, I'll pause there, I'll put a photograph of this up on sodshow.com and search for, what do I search for? What do you call yourself?
Well, we're a team of experimental archaeologists from UCD. We're a mixture of postgrads and undergrads, and we're running today a fullocked fia, or burnt mound, to cook some venison in. And then we're also cooking medieval stews in replicated medieval pots.
To backtrack to where I kind of should have started, which is the description of, so for those listening in audio, what we have is an area of about, let's say, 6 meters by about 15 meters approximately. It's split in half. One of it has a kind of a mound that you would almost sit on and read poetry to your loved one, except there's a hole beneath, like you might see in those horse racing things where they jump over the fence and they go partway through the water. It's a bit like that. And on the other side, there's a fire burning where there's hot woods. And are there stones in there as well?
Yeah, so we've got a mixture of different types of volcanic stones that we heat up in the fire. They come out at about 700 degrees, and then we put them in the water, and gradually the temperature starts to build. We bring it up to boiling, and then the deer will stew away in that.
Because it's not the usual thing that you might see at a inverted commas gig or something that might happen in Dublin city centre if somebody was to organise an event, fair to say. And that's not to be in any way disrespectful. Yeah, but what are your own qualifications, first of all?
Well, I'm doing my PhD out in UCD at the moment, using experimental archaeology and looking specifically at the early medieval period. So a lot of metal work and ceramic fire and cook and things like this. And what we kind of do out in UCD, they have an experimental centre out there. It's a dedicated green space for running experiments. And we just learn to work with materials. So from stone to bone to hides, ceramic, everything, and everything in between, processes, how to melt metal and all this kind of stuff. And then we test archaeological theories using these methods.
I'll backtrack this, and there is the stereotypical question, which I always ask, and it starts something along the lines of, Katrina and David, if you're listening to this, you'll understand and know where I'm going before I even get there. But I used to grow plants under my bed. Okay. I ended up studying horticulture. Okay. I now build gardens for a living. You potentially, possibly had an Xbox or an abacus or something along the lines of, how on God's earth did you end up veering into this?
Complicated sequence of events, really, but
I've got a lot of time.
It started off, for me, kind of working with materials, started with flint, so making stone tools, and I spent a summer living in Berlin, and very poor. So I used to go for long walks in forests and find these stones, and then I just started knocking them together. Flakes came off, sharp edges, then I started making arrowheads. I got into making bows and arrows, and I kind of spiraled endlessly. I was studying archaeology at the time as well, so I kind of knew a little bit about the theory of what I was doing, but then the practical side of it really just came about through messing with things.
Do you know that moment in a film or in real life, one or the other, where you're sitting in a pub or a nightclub and you've had like maybe a bit too much to drink and you see this beautiful lady and you go, what are you doing? She says, oh, I work in a day job.
Oh, well,
she works in a cafe, and you go, well, you're very beautiful, and she says, well, what do you do for a living? And you go, oh, God, not this one again.
Well, it depends. It depends on the mood. Kind of, I suppose the baseline we'd say is, I'm an archaeologist, and that elicits one of two answers usually, either a blank stare, which is always nice, or they say, oh, that's great, my brother or my son loves dinosaurs. which is disappointing, but depending on how much you like this beautiful lady, you might just go along with it or try and qualify it a little bit. But it does happen quite a bit. Dublin taxi drivers are very good at that question.
There's the dude who used to be in Blackadder. He played Baldrick.
Yeah.
I've lost his name for the life of me.
Tony Robinson.
Yeah. That's the very one. He ended up doing the time thing. So for those wondering the connection between gardening, radio shows, podcasts, and anything else, it is the earth, it is the stones. You have mounds of wood. You are using everything that we work with every single day of the week. And sure, yes, we are veering off the point, but you kind of really do work with what whoever has the remote control and the great big sky above has kind of given us on the cards that has been dealt to us.
Yeah, so kind of different projects require different materials, and we source all the materials ourselves. It costs money to buy in materials, so it's cheaper for us to go out and get them. So when we need clay, we need specific clays. Modern clays won't do, so we go and dig the clay ourselves. We drive to certain sites, get the clay, we get the stone that's specific to the task, take it back again, use that. And when we've done an experiment where we built a Mesolithic house, which is an early Stone Age house up in UCD, and we cut all the trees ourselves using axes made from sharpened stone. The stone was sourced from beaches in Dublin. We sharpened the stones, made the shafts for them, put them on the shafts, and cut down all these trees, 30 trees with these sharp stones. And strange enough, it didn't take that long to cut them down. Each one took about 14 minutes. Very effective weapons and tools.
Do you get heckled for cutting down trees for the sake of your studies?
We got permission. The nice people on UCD campus let us. So that was a bit of an easier one. But sometimes we have to like drive for hours to get down to a somebody's site who let us go down and cut trees. And it's a lot of beg, borrow, and steal, and a lot of barter happens. And
is there an element of per student about it? But really, if you had all the money in the world, it shouldn't kind of be any other way.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's better if you source these things yourself. You're getting a kind of a good impression for where the material comes from, how to source it, how to process it, how to do all these things. And you're going through the whole chain that they would have gone through kind of in prehistoric and historical times. Buying it, yeah, sometimes as an expedient it's good, but I prefer to source.
On the matter of the soil, you noted on it just there briefly, but I mean, why you say the soils differ, and I'm kind of playing devil's advocate on this. I do have a knowledge of soils, but you suggested that to find a certain type of, for want of a better word, medieval type soil, you have to travel to somewhere. Is the soil that I have in my back garden not the same as the soil? Okay, fair enough. I know it's not the same as the soil that's in a field, let's say in Kildare, but is one, are they not all, you know, existing for bazillions of years?
Well, I mean, how we work in archaeology is that soil has layers. This is how we date things, and that the soil that we have here is not the soil that would have been existed during the medieval period, and it changes kind of in terms of its thickness depending on different conditions, geological kind of issues and kind of environmental factors. So the soil goes up in layers, and you can see clear distinct layers if you cut down a line cut a section into a piece of ground. We can see different instances, and in different instances we'll get different material, and they'll be specific to them periods.
Let's bring this back to basics and just to put in context, when we went to National Potato Day 2 years ago up in Snart Ecology Centre, I think they were doing talks on growing potatoes, and there was a lady there who grew, let's say, 5,000 potato plants at one time, and I said for the person at home who wants to grow one in a pot, break this down for me, how do they go about doing that? And she explained it extremely well. So I go out my back garden and I take a shovel and I go down how many feet and how many levels do I see and what forms that and what impact does it have on the garden that I do have that is out there. So if I was 6 years of age, and I'm also the dad of this invisible child at 6 years of age that I own, how do I go about getting them into archaeology? How do I go about getting into it? How do I go about getting into the study of what you have done, which is essentially soil and what lies beneath and what has formed in layers?
Well, I mean, I think nowadays through primary schools and secondary schools, there's a lot of good programs that introduce archaeology to kids. When I was in school, I never really heard the word archaeology, but now you kind of have different programs that come into schools that help kids out, that give fake digs, kind of talk them through the sequence of materials and what to do with them, how to look at them. Way more museums now, way more kind of options just to kind of engage with material, to handle stuff. And through what we do, we make an awful lot of replica things. And again, you can't touch the things in the case in the museums, but you can touch the replicas. And I mean, they're made from the same materials in the same ways. You can get a tactile interaction with them. And this is a kind of, I suppose, the initial starting point for any kid, really.
I asked this in a very nice way, but did your parents kind of look out the kitchen window at you and kind of go, oh, Jesus, Jimmy, why won't he play with all the other kids? I think there's something wrong with him. Maybe we should go and get him looked at. Look, there he is with his stones again. Was there an element of that about it?
I think that's more in the last kind of 5 or 6 years than it is when I was a kid. My mom looks despairing at me sometimes. I get, oh, Brendan, an awful lot. Coming back smelling the smoke.
Your cohorts are looking at me and they seem to have empathy for you.
Yeah. I think this is...
You're laughing at him, not with him. Yeah, okay, you know your friend. Okay, they're not the people who are not your friends.
Brendan, do you know Paul Duffy?
I do indeed.
Yeah, tell us a bit about his dig in Balldoyle.
Okay, yeah, so Grassroots Archaeology is Paul Duffy's kind of company, and he's running a dig in a housing estate in Balldoyle. And the question that he's essentially asking is, can you find archaeology underneath a disturbed kind of, you know, building site? And the housing estate was built in the 70s. It would have been all this kicked up kind of, you know, construction rubble and all these things. So Paul grew up in the area, and when he was out kind of digging, he found some small scraps of pottery, got interested, looked at various maps, and there was indications that there might be a medieval site underneath here. So he got all the necessary things to perform an excavation, and we went out this summer and excavated a number of trenches and found material relating to lots of different layers of activity there. But it's a community-based kind of project that invites schools and kind of participants, a lot of like neighbours, and because it's in a housing estate, you just get people wandering by, just asking what you're doing, just talking to them, and there was loads and loads and loads of interest. And at the beginning, people were kind of looking at us thinking, you know, what are these people doing? But as it went on through the weeks, we became a fixture, and people would come up and offer us tea and talk away, and they were very interested in archaeology underneath their feet.
Before the dig, he was out there about 3 months beforehand with a big roller. Mm. What was that? What was that machine? He was looking like he was radioing under the ground or something. Tell us about that.
So this is a geophys sweep, it's called. And basically what it does is it sends pulses down to the ground and features. It creates kind of a map of features that can lie underneath the ground. And what he was trying to do is, without excavating, which requires an awful lot of work and effort, just trying to initially pinpoint where the trenches might need to go, and to kind of line it up with other aerial photographs that we had and see if consistent patterns come up, and that targeted our excavations then. But that was a very interesting, large kind of contraption that they had to do it. It's not always like that.
So Balldoyle has medieval history, but here today you're doing the further experiments. You're trying to see if those pots that were found in Balldoyle will actually work. Yeah. Is that it? Tell us about that.
What we've done as well is, so these crumbs of pottery that were first found are very distinctive. And we know just kind of from a number of features in them that they're a certain type of medieval cooking pot. And this cooking pot we've replicated. We sourced the clays, we sourced the stone that's inside the clay, we sourced all the relevant things and come up with a way of replicating it that we feel is right based on a number of sources. And then what we're doing today is we're cooking stews in them, and that'll create a kind of a residue within the pots. Then we'll break open the pots and analyse them against the pots that Paul's taken out and see if we can kind of put this together. And basically what these stew pots is, these stew pots are found in every medieval site in Leinster and the surrounding area. Every single medieval site has just a huge abundance of these. And what we can do is then kind of say, well, there's stews are you kind of been used. Lots of people are eating stews. Everyone, different classes of people, elite to down to the kind of farmers, everybody's doing this. And stew has a very kind of set number of ingredients. And as well, we can tell from the bones that we find, animal bones, domesticated animals, cereals that have been farmed, what goes into these stews and how these people are living and kind of their daily life.
My interest is that I'm from Baldoyle. Yeah. So I met Paul by accident, and he was with his dad, Jim, and it was before the other guys, probably yourself and a few diggers, came to help him. And I was just passing the site this morning at 9 a.m. on Seagrange Green, and it's all gone back to normal. It's all back. You were looking for a landscape gardener to help you put it back together. Did you get one?
I think that one of the requirements is that it was landscaped beautifully. So a landscaper came over and kind of advised Paul on how to put a ball back together and make it all as if we were never there. But yeah, no, it's just gone straight back to the way it was.
If people want to find out more, if people wanted to get in touch, if people maybe kind of said, well, jeepers, yeah, this is kind of bringing, you know, looking at the soil in my back garden or dealing with the earth, and I'd like to go a stage further because growing stuff really isn't for me. I'd like to do what Tony is doing on the television, so to speak. How would you best advise the next generation, the 6, 12, 17-year-old who maybe was a bit like yourself when you were younger, to get involved or to further garner that interest, so to speak?
Well, there's a lot of companies around Ireland now that are kind of allowing kids opportunities to engage with this. So there's some field school archaeological digs that you can go on to and you know, learn. They teach you how to excavate. Also, I mean, the internet is a great source. So, I mean, UCD's archaeology Facebook page, that's just got all the projects that we do on it. And I think that kind of through the internet you can find lots of different sources, lots of things that are coming on. So last night was Culture Night. We were doing flint knapping demonstrations in the National Museum. We'll be back there again in November to do more, and working with various groups and organizations, going to schools and stuff like that. So basically just keep an eye out for events and look at the internet.
Excellent. Brendan, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute inspirational pleasure to chat with you.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been fun.
Yes, thank you, Brendan. It was just then we realised that we interviewed Brendan a couple of years back at the Spirit of Folk, the first year round, where the Dunderry dig for the little children was done, and we were talking archaeology. Well, it's nice to see he's moved on to some bigger things, but it's the same plot of ground and different plots of ground. Wonderful stuff, great story, and it links to my own hometown, Baldoyle. You never know who you'll meet or where you'll meet them. We also have news just come in during the show that our very own David Corscadden has won an award for the Garden Bloggers Hall of Fame Best Garden Blog Look, Graphics, Photography and Presentation. Well done, David. I haven't got all the details, so just leave it at that for the moment, but well done. This has come in on Twitter. I'd also go for a Song of the Week, and no better song after doing grassroots archaeology than this. The Mock Turtles, Can You Dig It? With thanks to the Spirit of Folk, Natasha, Martin, Caroline, and the crew of many that we never mention. Thanks for your hospitality again at the Spirit of Folk, Dundarry Park, Dundarry, County Meath. I said they were going to be in the Polytunnel, but I'm wrong. But it sounds like the Polytunnel, but it's not. It's Rusborough House. Simon and Ruth, hello.
Hello, Sajo. This is Simon and Ruth calling. Today, we're not in the Polytunnel, but we're up in Rusborough House, just outside of Blessington, County Wicklow. Beautiful morning. We're up in the Rhododendron area, and it's quite nice. But we'll get back to gardening at home and how that's going. So, the big news at the Polytunnel. It's after getting a lot colder, so we had to cover up the hole in the back. So we had some excess plastic that was left from when we put up the Polytunnel, and we made a sort of a back flap. So that's kept it a bit warmer. We were at our farmer's market recently talking to the guy we get the fruit and veg off, and he was giving us advice about growing the tomatoes, and we're having problems that we have. Not a huge amount, but there's tomatoes there, and they're green, and they're green, and they're not red. So, what advice did he give us, Ruth?
He told us to cut off all of the leaves, stop watering them. We should have stopped watering them about a month ago, and to cut the tops off. So, we went in and stripped all of the lovely tomato plants of their leaves and their tops, and it looks sort of stark and sad in there at the moment, but we're hoping that this will lead to better things.
Yeah, the idea is that it will force them, it'll stress them to put their energy into the fruit instead of trying to go straight up.
Mm.
Yeah. We threw down more mulch as well, sawdust, but then a lot of mushrooms came up, and that was fun, but I'm sure it'll be fine. The greens, didn't you take some out?
I pulled the spinach out.
Yeah, I think it stopped producing, so.
Yeah, it all went to seed really quickly, and the slugs were enjoying it, so I just pulled it all out and gave it to the chickens. I pulled the peas out as well, so the Polytunnel's looking a bit more naked these days.
Yeah, and as Peter said, we are novice gardeners.
We are.
This is our first year. It's all experimental, and there's lots of things we would do differently, and it's really organizational stuff and, you know, setting times for repeat sowings of seeds and hoping that we get food to harvest. We haven't harvested a whole lot from the Polytunnel yet, but the peppers are coming along, actually.
They are. I unfortunately don't like peppers, but they're very successful, so we're giving them away.
Yeah, an interesting fact. It's actually very hard to get peppers in Ireland to turn red, because there's not enough sunshine, so they're all going to be green peppers. But we haven't tried them yet, but they look good.
They smell nice anyway.
Smell nice, yeah. They're quite light. Like the ones you buy in the shop seem to have a heavy water weight in them, so it'll be interesting to see if they'll be bursting with flavour instead of bursting with water weight, you know? yeah, so the allotment as well. We grow some stuff in our own allotments. It's quick plug in here, Westtown Farm Allotments, just outside of Johnstown, Naas Gundagalar. Yeah, I run and rent them, so they're doing alright. But we took a plot this year. We grew a lot of pumpkins, and they're spreading over the whole plot and doing well. But we made
pumpkin pie. This is like the best news of the season. Like, I have all of these pumpkins, and from each pumpkin I can get about 3 pies.
Yeah, the worktop at home is
covered in pumpkins.
It's covered in pumpkins, yeah. You know, you have to.
We've been making ourselves sick off of the pumpkin pie, but it's such a nice sick.
Yeah, but is it a vegetable or a fruit? Vegetable? It's healthy anyway. Regardless of what else goes into it. Yeah, the spuds as well did all right. We did varieties of Cara and Sarpos. The Sarpo being the blight resistant.
Mm.
So
the peas did well enough. But we planted loads of things. I tried asparagus, that didn't work out. Broccoli, the pigeons got that. The kale is making a strong comeback, though. So, the chard is doing really well.
The kale was late to pop up, but it's getting there.
Well, it wasn't. It's just that, like, first the slugs got it, and then the pigeons, so.
Yeah, so that's the news from Nice. We are Simon and Ruth. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks, Ruth. Thanks, Simon. Pumpkins are a fruit. And if you spot a naked polytunnel in the Kildare area, call the Gardaí on 045-555-555 if you can get them out of their vehicle. With thanks to our sponsors, greensax.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. Check them out on the internet, greensax.ie. Next week on The Sod Show, Jane Powers returns. Don't miss that. With thanks to Peter Donegan for the earlier interview and production skills. From myself, Brian Green, until next week, take care. Bye-bye.